Thanks, Bliss. Yes, we're in the WRTI Performance Studio with tubist Craig Knox, pianist Thomas Weaver, and conductor Mark Russell Smith. And they have a special treat for us, a preview of a concert this weekend. Take it away.
Thank you.
Come on in, Mark.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, I'm here in the WRTI Performance Studio. I'm Susan Lewis, and I'm here with Craig Knox, Mark Russell-Smith, and Thomas Weaver. And we've just heard the second movement of Jennifer Higdon's Tuba Concerto, which Craig premiered with the Pittsburgh Symphony last season. Okay. And this weekend, you'll be performing with the Curtis Symphony Orchestra in the Philadelphia premiere, both at Immaculata University on Saturday evening and at the Kimmel Center on Sunday afternoon.
That's right.
So welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Craig, can you tell us a little bit about how this concerto came to be, and did you work with Jennifer while she was writing it?
Yes, absolutely. So this came to be because my orchestra, the Pittsburgh Symphony, came to me and offered to commission or take the lead in commissioning a new tuba concerto, which is obviously such a great opportunity. There's not a lot of repertoire for the tuba. The first name that came to mind was Jennifer for me, because we were students together at Curtis many years ago, and as a matter of fact, also with Mark Russell-Smith during that same time. So I knew her.
The glory years, right?
Good years, looking back on them.
Yes.
I had also just been keeping up with her career because she had been having a lot of success with many of her pieces, but at that time, her violin concerto and her percussion concerto were getting a lot of play, and I had played those in the orchestra and enjoyed those. And she always writes great tuba parts. She, you know, not all composers bother to, take much notice of the instrument, and she always had difficult, challenging parts, and that really were interesting in the way that they, played in the orchestra. So the Pittsburgh Symphony, as well as the Curtis Institute and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra in Glasgow, Scotland, were partners in this commission of this new work. And yes, we premiered it, the world premieres, which I had the privilege to perform with my colleagues there in Pittsburgh last March. And that was under the baton of Robert Spano, who's another Curtis graduate,
right,
by the way. So there's
a whole lot
of Curtis in this.
Right, right.
And then the European premiere was given in Glasgow with John Whitener as the tuba player, who's their tuba player in Royal Scottish National, who is also a Curtis graduate. And then this is the sort of the culmination of the whole thing. Now getting a chance to do it with the, this current group of students in the Curtis Orchestra, which is really just incredible for me, and I think Mark agrees, to come back in a totally different way and still be part of the music making at the school. So.
Wow, it really is a family affair.
Yeah,
as often happens with Curtis. I mean,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's
a small, tight-knit group, and we tend to follow each other around, so.
That's great. Now, the tuba is a beautiful instrument, and it's so much fun to see it up close. Mm-hmm. Could you describe it for us? A reminder, though, that if you are near a phone, who is not near their phone, or a computer or an iPad, you can watch us live on Facebook right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the tuba is the lowest brass instrument. It's the bass instrument in the brass family. All the brass instruments are really just the same. What they are is a long piece of brass tubing, open brass tubing that's wound around in a shape really just to make it easier to carry around, because otherwise this thing would be about 15 feet long. It resonates the sound that we make with our lips. So the sound, the instrument really isn't capable of vibrating itself. Like, a piano, the string vibrates, and a percussion instrument, the head vibrates, and a woodwind, the reed vibrates. For a brass instrument, it's the mouth of the performer that vibrates, makes a funny buzzing sound that we do into a mouthpiece that then focuses it, basically into a big amplifier. It's just a big open tube that amplifies that buzzing sound of the lips.
Well, what's the blue?
Yeah, and then you see that I have valves, all brass instruments. You don't have to have valves. A bugle is a brass instrument without valves at all. The valves just divert the length of the tubing into longer and longer tubes so that you can get different pitches, different wavelengths. And I have this blue, this is the closest thing I'll ever come to a tattoo, I think, is this blue valve, which is just, I keep track, I have several sets of valves that different, the people make for me to certain specifications, and I'm just trying to keep track of which valve is in there. And I like the colors a little color.
A little rebel. Yeah. A little rebellious. Right here.
So it doesn't symbolize anything.
No, it's
okay.
But I'm glad you noticed it.
Could you talk a little bit about how this concerto shows the tuba in ways that we don't ordinarily hear? And right. Could you demonstrate anything?
Well, I mean, frankly, probably pretty much anything that I play is going to be ways that you wouldn't otherwise hear, because people don't usually hear the tuba, you know, except in a small group. They might, you know, in an oompa band or something, you might have a vague idea, or in a marching band, a vague idea of that bass beat, you know, that you get in simple music. But there's really no reason that a tuba can't play as technically and lyrically as, let's say, a trumpet, you know, which is what we usually would hear solo music played on.
And that's what we just heard in this movement.
Right. Absolutely. I think even just this movement, even though it's what I would consider to be, you know, it's a slow movement and it's a lyrical movement, there's a lot of technique in it, as you could hear a lot of those runs, those flourishes that interact with the orchestra, or in this case, the piano. You know, those are that's fairly technical, although sort of in a smooth singing kind of a style. So the other two movements in this piece that she wrote show off the more flashy side of brass playing, and in this case tuba playing. So in that case, you get the more sharp, you know, bright articulations, the sort of heralding, you know, fanfare-ish kind of sounds. So she sat down with me. You know, we're both now, you know, having been students together many years ago, now on faculty together at Curtis. So I see her from time to time, and we sat down and had a long lunch at the beginning of this process, and we talked about all of this, because for her it's certainly a discovery, to embark on something like this. We talked about the existing repertoire, which she studied very earnestly. She listened to a lot of music and studied a lot of scores, and then we just talked about what the tuba can do, what the limits are, that we don't want to try to push too far past. There's always discussion about the range, how high. I mean, you heard some fairly high notes in that movement I just played for a tuba.
So is there any lick or any particular?
Well, yeah, I was thinking I would just demonstrate in the third movement, which is she calls an adamant scherzo. There was some discussion back and forth, and in this day and age it's great, because she would email me PDFs of sketches as she was having ideas and working on things, but wanting to know if it created any difficulty or if it was something she could include. And she was wondering about these repeated, you know, very fast repeated articulated notes, and whether that was going to be possible. And so some of these are articulated, and hopefully, so you hear the sharpness of the front, you know, which comes from the tongue, and some are smooth, fast slurs, which comes just from the movement of the fingers. But it was this repetitive articulation that she was asking about, which is a multiple tongue technique that we use. But so. This is the kind of thing that goes on throughout the entire movement. Some very fast groups of notes, and some sharply, you know, reiterated notes. So
sounds as if it's a lot of fun to play.
I love to play the tuba, but and that's a good thing, because it takes it is fun, but this is a challenging piece, so it takes a lot of work. I mean, just months after months of repetitive practice on one measure at a time, or one group of five or six notes at a time, until it's smooth and hopefully it sounds easy. Or yeah, that's the idea.
Well, and in typical, I mean, Craig is a virtuoso, and by definition, he makes what's very, very difficult sound very easy and kind of tossed off. So it is deceiving how difficult the piece is, but how easy he makes it sound.
Right. And it's interesting to hear it today with piano. So Tom, this is, you played the entire orchestra, right?
Right. Yeah.
How did that go?
That's what I think it is, for the most part. Well, Jennifer dropped the score off a few weeks ago to me, and I suppose this is a new arrangement for piano and tuba, mm-hmm. and the second movement can actually be performed that way. So it was very interesting to see what she decided to include in the piano part and what changes from the orchestra part. I mean, I can't say that I'm that familiar with the orchestra part on the whole, but I'll hear it Sunday, And it's nice to have an interesting lens into what the piece is.
Well, I noticed when you were playing that Mark was studying the score.
Well, just, yeah, having an opportunity to just sit back and listen. And this is such, you know, I think of this as pretty operatic, especially the opening and closing. And so part of my training here at Curtis was, you know, to learn how to accompany really well. Max Rudolph, my teacher, was very adamant about us being very good accompanists. And so just hearing it one more time, hearing the ins and outs of the melody, how it all fits together. I mean, I just wanted to take this opportunity while I was here to listen to that. And it's very helpful. And it very much is a back and forth, especially in those sections where the string, in this case, the string body is kind of enveloping this beautiful lyrical sound.
So what factors are you considering, because you're preparing the orchestra?
Well, there are all sorts of factors, actually. And when a new piece comes to life, especially a concerto, there are inevitably balance issues you talk about, or, you know, how thick the orchestra can be. Jennifer writes incredibly colorfully for the orchestra. And the tuba is louder and softer depending on the range. And so if there's a big, thick, full orchestra and he comes in a low range, then we all have to adjust. And this is absolutely very normal for orchestras whenever you're accompanying anything, whatever, the Dvorak cello concerto or Brahms violin concerto, that no matter what is written, the orchestra just has to drop. And first and foremost is not covering the soloist. And this is something that the Curtis students have to learn. It's something the professional orchestras do, I think, pretty normally. And so there's kind of a learning process, how they play their complicated parts, and when they need to come out, when they need to make sure not to cover the soloist. It's really being sensitive chamber musicians and accompanists.
So, Craig, when you're playing, and then we'll get to some more music, when you're playing this piece, practicing it, thinking about the orchestra and how you will interact with the orchestra, and then you play it with the piano. Mm-hmm. Are they two pieces in your head, or are they one?
No, that's a really good question. I mean, it really is different, and you know, the way that the piano is a lot more nimble in its ability to move, you know, quickly on a dime, you know, and just sort of change course easily. And in orchestras, you have 100 people. And everybody has to be coaxed into playing, you know, into moving together, because you don't want it to just fall apart. Someone starts to move quickly. So there's, you know, there's a little bit more, you know, ability to improvise in that way in the moment with piano. But on the other hand, you know, what you don't have with piano is the incredible range of color. And Jennifer, in particular, as a composer, is known for the range of colors that she creates with the orchestral soundscape. And it's thrilling to hear the orchestra behind you. Yeah.
Wow. Well, these performances will be very exciting this weekend. And you're going to send us off with something not on the program for this weekend.
Right. This is just a favorite of mine. And I thought it would be a nice closer. And speaking of operatic music that Mark brought up, this comes from one of the great opera composers, Giuseppe Verdi. And it's an arrangement of the prelude, the opening of his opera I Masnadieri, which is The Bandits. And it's the tuba plays the part of the solo cello within the orchestra, and then Tom will be playing the orchestra part behind that. And this is a favorite of mine because it was transcribed for tuba and piano by my teacher, Paul Krzyzewski, who for many years the tuba player in the Philadelphia Orchestra, still on faculty at the Curtis Institute. He actually made this arrangement while I was a student at the school, and I premiered it in Curtis Hall, as a matter of fact, with him playing the piano part.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So, cool. Yeah. But I think it's actually very similar along the lines of the second movement from the concerto that I just played for you, the Higden, in terms of the lyrical nature of it, but from a different period, obviously, and very operatic. I think it's almost like, comes across like an aria, even though it's composed for the cello.
Great. Beautiful. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
If you're just joining us, we've been listening to Craig Knox, tubist, and Tom Weaver on the piano, and chatting with Mark Russell Smith. Come on in, Mark. This weekend, Craig will be playing with the Curtis Symphony Orchestra, the Philadelphia premiere of Jennifer Higdon's Tuba Concerto, in concerts led by Mark.
Right. And we also have Appalachian Spring, Copland, Ives' Unanswered Question, and then Dvorak Symphony No. 7. So, full program.
Sounds like a great concert. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to visit the WRTI Performance Studio. We've enjoyed talking to you and hearing you play.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having
us. Thank you
very much. Back to you, Bliss.
All right.
That's a wrap.
Yeah.
As they say.
12:40.
Yeah, boom.
Yeah. 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 Thank you so much, guys.
You were.